You're listening to Chris Carlin on 98.7 ESPN.
You better believe it. Free agency starts tomorrow in earnest. It's Carlin, 98.7 ESPN, the NFL. Lots of discussion today around the National Football League coming your way over the next 3 hours. Brunch with the big fella. How you doing on this Sunday? You can always tweet us at Chris Carlin over on Twitter, That Guy Carlin on Instagram, 800-919-3776, 800-919-ESPN. We will check in on the Jets and Giants individually with Rich Cimini and Jordan Runon, and we will also have Ryan Dunleavy from the New York Post to talk some NFL free agency as well. Okay, couple of things to start. Number one, with the Jets, there are priorities as negotiations can begin tomorrow. You can't officially sign anybody until the start of the year, league year on Wednesday, but you can start negotiating with free agents tomorrow. I've looked at this over the last few days, and there is just no way that the Jets should go and spend a ton of money on a free agent receiver. And the biggest reason why is that the two guys that would have been well worth it for them got franchise tagged. And that's Allen Robinson and that's Chris Godwin from Tampa Bay. Right now, considering who is left, I would not go into that realm if I'm the New York Jets. You know, Joe Douglas has talked so much about building this team through the draft and supplementing with free agency. If you want to go get a mid-level receiver or a good receiver to help your team out, that's great. There is no need to spend a fortune on Kenny Golladay. There is no need to spend a fortune on Juju Smith-Schuster. And the reason is simple. When it comes to Smith-Schuster, he's somebody that last year just did not have great production for somebody that had 97 catches. He had not less than 9 yards a catch last year. You look at somebody, and his best season came when Antonio Brown was still at his height in 2018. I think he's somebody that's a waste of money and frankly could also be a bit of a headache, a bit of a diva. Kenny Golladay is an explosive receiver, and I could understand it, but at the same time, you have injury concerns there as well. You lost him for the majority of last year, and I would not go and spend a ridiculous amount of money on him. I look at Corey Davis, who is from the Tennessee Titans, and I have to tell you, there's no reason to go and do that. That guy was the number 5 overall pick a few years ago, and he has started to come around finally. But he's not somebody that I look at and say, the Jets absolutely need to allocate resources there. This is about the allocation of money. And yes, they have a lot under the salary cap. But that doesn't mean you go and spend it foolishly, because that is how this team has gotten into bad situations before. You don't need to pull a Maccagnan. C.J. Mosley a couple of years ago. All right, maybe you'll get something from him finally this year. But how did that work out, especially when you were spending that amount of money on a middle linebacker? How did it work out when you brought in Le'Veon Bell? Of course, it was a disaster. These are things you can't look at anymore. So when it comes to the Jets and free agency, there are two places that the emphasis should be. And that's on the offensive line and at pass rush. There's a lot of pass rushers out there, and the Jets are positioned very well to go and get an elite level pass rusher. I would love to see the Jets go get involved on Shaquille Barrett. You watch him with the Tampa Bay Bucs this past year, and yeah, he had Jason Pierre-Paul on the other end, but that didn't really make the difference for him being elite in the postseason. Guy had 3 sacks in the NFC Championship game, another one in the Super Bowl. Big reason why they were where they were this year. And he's also somebody that they franchise tagged last year. I look at somebody in pass rush like Yannick Ngakoue. Yeah, you might say he got traded twice last year. Never had less than 8 sacks. Never had less than 8 sacks in a season. You know, the Jets need help getting to the quarterback. They have to be able to disrupt. And look where Robert Saleh's defenses were most effective. And this can be true of most teams. They're most effective when you get pass rushers that are great. I mean, look at what they had with Nick Bosa. You know, even after Nick Bosa was gone last year, they were still a really good defense. So that's where I'm looking first. And then 1 and 1A, really, they're on the same level, is the interior of the offensive line. If the Jets are going to ride it out with George Fant at right tackle, okay. I mean, let's see how that works out. Am I 100% convinced about that? I'm not. Do I feel awful about it? No, I don't feel awful about it. There is no way I am drafting Penei Sewell at the top of the draft just to do that with another offensive lineman at that spot. I know you could talk about bookend tackles and all that. No, that doesn't make sense. What makes sense is signing somebody like Joe Tooney. And there are going to be people who are going to be lining up to get him. And the Jets may have to overpay a little bit. But they can afford to do that with somebody like Joe Tooney. And they need somebody like that. Dominant on the inside. That's what he is. And you need somebody like, you know, Lindsley from the Packers, the center. You need to secure one of those two guys in free agency to make this football team better. And that's where the allocations need to be. It doesn't have to be at wide receiver. It can be in other places, but at wide receiver, if the Jets are looking for playmakers, and they're going to be at the top of the draft, and they decide to stay with Sam Darnold, and they trade back and get more picks, well, then you're going to have an opportunity to draft a big-time receiver, Jamar Chase, Jalen Waddle, Devontae Smith. You're going to have a chance. And you need to be able to look at that. Maybe you're going to talk about Rashad Bateman later on. From Minnesota, he's pretty good. There are guys there that I would rather see them draft young receivers than pay receivers this year. Then there's the Giants, who have gotten Nate Solder to restructure his contract a little bit, so they're going to save some money on it, but they still are not going to end up with a ton of money to spend here. So where are they going to be able to get better? Yeah, I'm very curious. If they're talking about going out and spending on a receiver, you know, it's never worked out well since they let Odell Beckham go. And we'll get to that in a bit. But it has also put them in a situation where you have Daniel Jones, you have a jam-packed salary cap, and you need help immediately. So I don't know what the other restructures are. You can always make that work somehow. But if the Giants want to spend some money on Kenny Golladay, I understand that more. I do, because you have a quarterback who's more ready to do something right now. You have an offense, if you get Saquon Barkley back healthy, that's more ready to do something right now. And frankly, your window is now because of the ugly, ugly spot with the cap. Ugly spot with the cap. So that's what's on the table for them. I would absolutely look at that. I would be looking at potentially signing another corner. I don't think I could spend big money on anything, but the Giants are going to have to, unfortunately, I think, unless they're going to be able to work out their own cap situation to sign a Golladay at the beginning, I think they're going to be shopping in the bargain bin in a little bit. I think they're going to be waiting to see if a free agent market that is going to be saturated actually breaks to their favor. And that leads me to the last thing that I just mentioned a second ago. On Friday, it was the 2-year anniversary of the Odell Beckham trade. I like Jabril Peppers. I like Dexter Lawrence. Odell Beckham was a headache. And when you look at his 2 years in Cleveland, he's played 22 games, 97 catches, 1,300 yards, 7 touchdowns. He had to go at the time. You can't say the Giants won the trade. Because here they are, 2 years later, still looking for a number one wide receiver. And the Golden Tate signing was an absolute disaster. So did they win that trade when you look back at it? I want to know what you got. I want to know what your Jets free agency priorities are. I want to know what your Giants wish list is when you know that you don't have a ton of money to spend. It's all there for you at 800-919-3776, 800-919-ESPN, 1230. We've got Jordan Ronan checking in. Giants, we will discuss that situation. Ryan Dunleavy at 1, 2 o'clock. We've got Rich Cimini. So NFL, we have got you covered, but we've also got plenty of other stories to get to today, including the Knicks and the solid win that they needed yesterday and a little preview of their matchup tomorrow night with the Nets, including the Mets and Edwin Diaz and what to expect. Including a story that I am just sick and tired of reading about and hearing about with the Yankees that means absolutely nothing. And somebody else that I'm just sick and tired of, that we need to get over the idea that this is a feel-good story, Rick Pitino. And the death of a boxing legend in Marvelous Marvin Hagler. And so we get started.
You're listening to Chris Carlin on 98.7 ESPN.
Cold-blooded start to a tweet from Adam Schefter. Oh, can't do this. He starts the tweet with, Houston and Miami have a deal. Your heart stops for a minute. And then it goes on. The Texans are trading linebacker Bednarik McKinney to the Dolphins for Shaq Lawson. You can't start it with Houston and Miami have a deal. That's rough. That's rough, Adam. 800-919-3776. Let's hit it. It's Carlin on a Sunday. We've got mimosas. Well, we wish we did. We dial it up. We start with Eddie in Rockland County. Eddie, how goes the battle?
Hey, Big Chris, how was church this morning, man? Did you put, how much you put in the basket?
Yeah.
Okay.
I never I'm made it there this morning. We don't need to get into religion, do we? I'm Catholic or non-practicing, so it is what it is. Anyway, go ahead.
Hey. All right, on the Jets, I agree with you with the offensive guard guy. I would get the defensive end from the Ravens. I would get
Judon, Judon or Ngakoue.
Ngakoue.
Okay.
Okay. And then in the draft, I got a whole new setup. I studied a couple of guys. I'm going after Justin Fields at number 2. I don't know if there's. I want to know what you think if there's opportunity to move down and still get him. I'm going after the Clemson running back, and I'm going after the Penn State tight end. I'm going to get a 1-2 punch for 10 yards. I'm going to get the guard from the get that ball rolling. I'm going to, I'm going to have the baby Gronk as the Penn State guy for blocking, and that Clemson running back.
Wait a minute. How are you getting the Clemson running back? Justin Fields and Pat Freiermuth, they're all likely first round guys.
No, they're not. They got I got a draft thing over here. Fields.
Freiermuth has been between second and first, and Travis Etienne is a high second, late first guy.
All right, so you take him with the Seattle pick. Mm-hmm. You take him with the Seattle pick, and your 34th. You take the tight end, which is he's ranked 55.
It's possible that could happen, Eddie. I don't know that it's likely that all of that's going to happen.
Be able to get rid of Darnold and address the defensive line next to the free agent guy or the offensive line next to the guy from New England with the Donald trade in. Okay.
Look, my Eddie, thanks for the call. The thing is with Darnold, if you're going to trade him, it has to be worth it, right? And I know that people are all about drafting a quarterback. And when I say it has to be worth it, it means that you're settled on your number one priority being quarterback and you're taking Wilson or you're taking Fields. I don't know that they could trade back very far and get Justin Fields. Could they trade back to 4 if the Falcons really wanted to take, let's just say, they were all over Zach Wilson instead of Fields? Maybe, but who knows if the Texans finally get a deal done by that point. If the Texans ended up trading Watson to Miami, they're going to be back in that third spot, and they're going to be looking to draft a quarterback. So I don't know that you could say that for sure, that you could get all of that. Now, look, on the baby Gronk thing, let's ease up on baby Gronk, okay? Freiermuth is a good tight end. He can play. He can absolutely play. I don't know that you're getting all of those guys with everything you're talking about. Like, you want an awful lot there. Now, I did see one, and I think it was Daniel Jeremiah, who suggested that you could potentially trade Darnold and a second-round pick to get back up into the middle of the first round if you wanted to do something like that with, you know, let's say San Francisco or somebody like that. Now, that's interesting, but you'd be giving up that second round pick and you'd have 3 ones at that point. All right. Maybe you could talk about it then. I don't know. I think you're asking for a lot to trade back, get Fields, get Etienne, get Freiermuth. I think that's a lot. And if the Jets did that, don't get me wrong, they would have had an amazing, amazing draft day. Amazing draft day. That would have been phenomenal. I hope I'm wrong on that. Greg's in Piscataway. Greg, what's going on, bud?
Hey, good morning, Chris. Happy Sunday.
Happy Sunday, brother. How are you?
Hey, I'm good. How are you?
Good.
Hey, Chris, I love you, man, but I don't see how you think that the Giants didn't win the Beckham trade.
Well, the thing is, I'm just saying, you'll get your chance. Don't worry, but I'm just saying definitively you can't say it as of right now. And the reason is they're still looking for a number one wide receiver. Peppers has been a good player for them, but he hasn't been a star. And I would look at Dexter Lawrence, and I love him, but I don't think definitively that with that package together, Shane Zimenez is situational. He's okay. I don't look at that package and say, yep, they absolutely won that deal.
Well, I think as of current, you can only grade it on what last year and the year prior to that have been. And, I mean, I think that overall with Peppers and Lawrence, I think that they've been good. But number one, most importantly, though, just from a locker room perspective, Odell Beckham went on national TV and said that he didn't want to be there and openly criticized his quarterback, which I've been I was very critical of Eli Manning. I get it, but it's not something that you do on national TV.
Totally agree.
That's number one.
Totally agree.
Number two is, you know, if you look at Pepper's play, and even if you look at Odell Beckham from, like you said, from a number one receiver standpoint, how much better do you think the Giants would have been if they had a number one receiver? Does that move the needle? I think no. And, I mean, essentially you traded a Pro Bowler, which Peppers was a Pro Bowler last year, for someone who is constantly hurt. He can't stay healthy. He hasn't remained healthy for any year in his career. That's number one. And do you think that's going to get better or worse as his career progresses? I would say worse.
Listen.
So, I mean, with all those factors, I think that I don't see how anyone can argue that the Giants did not definitively win that trade.
Well, a couple of things. Number one, he wasn't a Pro Bowler.
Okay. Who's that?
Let's be clear about that.
Peppers?
Peppers was not.
He should have been.
But you said he was. He was not. You said he was. He was not.
Okay.
Secondly, and I said he's been very good. My big argument here is more about the notion that while at the time I absolutely felt like they needed to get rid of him for all the reasons that you cited, I don't think you can say that they won the trade as a result, because they still need that particular position. They still need that number one wide receiver. Golden Tate was an abject nightmare, and I wonder if you would have better answers on Daniel Jones with Beckham right now than you do at the moment.
I don't think so, though. I mean, I think Golden Tate wasn't looking at Golden Tate as a number one receiver when I don't know what Gettleman was looking at, but I wasn't looking at him as a number one receiver. I was looking at him as a slot guy, reliable, stay healthy, moves the yard markers. But I don't think that Golden Tate at any point in his career has been a number one dominant receiver.
No, he's been a very, very good receiver before. It was just not now. And thanks for the call. He's been close to a number one receiver when he was in Seattle. He put up some huge numbers in Seattle. And I'll just to make the point, but I mean, I agree that when he made the decision to sign Golden Tate, I mean, Golden Tate had what? Seattle numbers and Detroit numbers. The numbers in Detroit, I mean, he had 90 catches in four straight years and over 1,000 yards in three of them. So, you know, those are big-time numbers, specifically in Detroit more than Seattle. In Detroit, that's where he really blossomed. Started to show it in Seattle, was more of a big-play guy there. But you can't say that Dexter Lawrence and Peppers, with what the Giants have been, made this deal through 2 years so far a win. We still may not know. And I don't think Cleveland would sit there and say, God, we won this trade. The first year that Beckham had with Mayfield was pretty good.
You're listening to Chris Carlin on 98.7 ESPN.
Hearing Yankee players speak about how amazing Gary Sanchez looks. Like, this is just such the spring training cliche garbage narrative. A long, long time ago, I once learned, never, never pay real attention and build expectations off of things that happen in March and in September when it comes to baseball. Gary Sanchez looking good in the spring and with three home runs. I'm supposed to get excited about that. I'm sorry, I'm not. Not when guys are working things out. Not when guys are working their way into shape. Not when pitchers are just trying to find their way and navigate what pitches are going to work best for them this season. And really just trying to stay healthy and get into their routines. None of it means anything at all. None of it. Zero. Zero. So just stop. And I know it's spring training and it gets monotonous and there are no stories to cover. But Gary Sanchez is such an overplayed story. I hope for certain that he gets it all together and he actually figures it out. And the Yankees are not in a situation for moving on. Personally, I'm betting against it. If there were odds on to whether or not it was actually going to happen, I'm betting against it. And I would not rule out the idea that Gary Sanchez, by the end of the year, is not a Yankee. It could get so bad at some point with Sanchez this season that they're actually going to end up having to DFA him. I don't buy anything in the spring. Nothing. It means nothing. He's getting better defensively. That's awesome. That's great. Heard a lot about it last year. Going to be down on one knee. Going to be throwing the ball down and gunning people out from his knees. Going to be framing that low pitch so brilliantly. How'd it work out? The ace didn't want to pitch to him. Sanchez has just been an absolute mess for a long time. And I have to tell you, what really truly put me over the edge was him actually saying to Marley Rivera, I never got an explanation as to why I wasn't playing. You never got an explanation. Like, that is beyond millennial crap. If you are at the plate and you stink and you can't do what the ace pitcher wants you to do, you're not going to play. It's that simple. If you're not good, you don't play. Simple enough. But the Yankees owed me an explanation. The manager owed me an explanation. Oh, my God. Oh, my God, stop. I totally get that there is a much different way of discussing things with players and making them feel part of the process more and really communicating well with them. This is one that didn't need to be communicated. If you had a tree trunk in your hands at the plate for your bat, you could not get a hit last year. 146. Who hits 146? Just unfathomable that you couldn't figure out on your own why you're not playing. Prediction. By August, Gary Sanchez will be designated for assignment. Ralph in Lakewood, next. 98.7 ESPN. Ralph, what's up?
No, he will not be designated for assignment in August. Colin, let me ask you a question, okay?
Sure.
If Gary Sanchez would have been having a terrible spring training, then you would have said, oh, they got to cut him now, and you would have lost your mind about it.
But no, I wouldn't. No, I wouldn't because of what I just said. I would not have been doing that because they would have made the decision to pay him $6 million. And if he had had a terrible spring, I'd say the same thing. Spring training means nothing. It means nothing on both ends.
If Gary Sanchez was striking out by the dozens right now, you wouldn't start your show and saying the Yankees got to get rid of him now?
No, I would not. Because again, spring training means nothing. September, when you're out of it, means very little. Or when you have nothing on the line, means very little. But so here we are in March, and this spring, he has been so bad in the regular season, that's what matters to me. That's what matters to me.
But you know what? Here's where it bothers me, because last season, okay, before the season started, every single person and their brother was saying you can't put a lot of stock into the season because it's Corona. We can't bring any proofs from how players play. It's the wash the season asterisk. It doesn't count. Don't look at the player's performance. And here we are cutting him based on last year. Did last year matter or not? Everyone was saying it doesn't matter before the season started. Sanchez had a bad season. Cut him. Come on. I thought it doesn't matter. Does it or not?
Hey, listen. You have a fair point to talk about that, but it's not like the track record wasn't there before it. That's why with Gary, like if Gary had been a consistent, even 240 hitter for his career, I would have said at that point, in other words, consistent, I'm not talking about averaging out. I'm talking about year in and year out, that's what you are. But you are going to hit your 30 home runs year in and year out. And
Let me finish.
You're going to, at the same time, not have these kind of years. In 2018, he hit 185. He's not good defensively. And while he has power, I will not deny that, the power he has does not justify his level of play.
You don't think he takes a little more hate than he should? I mean, this guy came into the league. The guy was he was off the charts. I have never seen a performance like that in my life. And, yeah, his defense was terrible, but he's been consistent.
The ace didn't
want
to pitch to him. And look, that's
like that.
It's fine that Gerrit Cole didn't want to pitch to him. That's fine. A lot of times you have guys like Greg Maddux had his own personal catcher. But my thing is everybody pumps him up. Everybody talks about how great he is, and then he's not great. So I just want to see actual production when it matters. That's it. I don't think that's too much to ask. And to be fair, I get why you would think that I'd be ripping him apart in the spring, but I would not be calling for the Yankees when they made the decision to spend $6 million on him for the year to cut him after spring training. Absolutely not.
Fine, but I do not think at all he will be DFA'd. I actually think he will be one of the best Yankees this year because he's angry also. He took a lot of garbage last season, a lot of garbage. He's not happy about that.
And none of it was justified. None of that garbage was justified.
No, it was. It was. He played really bad.
Yeah, he played horribly. Thanks for the call. Listen, he might end up being a guy that has a bounce back year. He might. But as much time as I gave you to make your point there, all it is believing that he's going to get it back. I like to, you know, see evidence that it's going to happen. You want to look at his career and say, well, every other year he's good. So maybe he's due for this to be that every other year? All right, good for you. Me? Let's get going in April. But I have the feeling that by mid-May, he's going to be hitting the .150. You're going to have more than one pitcher that doesn't love throwing to him. And you're going to have a problem on your hands. Especially whenever Chirinos gets back. I could absolutely see a scenario that when Chirinos gets back down the line and the Yankees have to make a decision later in the year, that in August, if they do make that decision to move on from him, and it's just become such a complete mess that they don't have any other choice but to get him a chance somewhere else, that's going to happen. Steven in Queens has been very patient. Steven, what's going on, buddy? How are you?
Hey, how are you? Thank you for taking my call.
Yes, sir.
I just want to get off topic for a second. I know you're talking about baseball and football. I just wanted to talk about the Nets for a minute.
Sure.
They have a need for some defense and rebounding. There's a free agent on the market. Used to be a Net. I think potentially could be a great fit in Rondae Hollis-Jefferson. Is there any reason why they haven't pursued him as of yet?
Well, I don't know the reason why they wouldn't have pursued him. As a defender, I can't argue with that. I would love to see the Nets get more help defensively. And I think Rondae Hollis-Jefferson in that role could absolutely help them. As far as why they haven't brought him in, I can't answer that. I mean, they obviously feel pretty good about Blake Griffin. I don't know why, because any evidence to support that he's going to have a terrific season just, frankly, has not been there. He's rejuvenated, because he's been terrible this year. When you're somebody like Blake Griffin and you're shooting under 40%, that's, like, inexcusable.
He was in an unhappy place. I can imagine that can affect his play as well.
Yeah, but he's been bad the last couple of years. You're not wrong about RHJ, though. You're not wrong. Thanks for the call. I think if they wanted to get some help defensively, that wouldn't be a bad way to go. I'd also say this. I'm reading this more. What a good defensive effort last night against the Pistons.
It's the Pistons. The Pistons stink. Stink, stank, stunk. That's the Pistons.
So pardon me if I'm not going to stand up and applaud for an elite defensive performance against the Pistons. I think we can get off that. Why I am, though, excited for tomorrow night, even though I know what the outcome is.
You're listening to Chris Carlin on 98.7 ESPN.
If only it were the case that was the case with Rick Pitino. You know, Mike Vaccaro of the New York Post, one of the great, great columnists in this town, writing about Rick Pitino today, and so many others talking about Rick Pitino today, and let's just say we disagree. I feel good for Iona. I do. I have friends who went to Iona. My boss went to Iona. The Grand Poobah went to Iona, which I did not know. I feel good that they won yesterday and that they're headed to the NCAA tournament, and you know, maybe they'll get that elusive win. I feel good for Tim Clueis, and he got a little mention yesterday from Coach Pitino. My problem is this. Can we not turn this into a redemption story for Rick Pitino? Because it's not. Can we not turn this into a story for Rick Pitino about how much he's overcome and how all those other ancillary things, though, his critics can always point to that. Yeah, they can. You know why? There's a lot of them. There's a lot of them. And I just thought on this Sunday, while we all celebrate Rick Pitino, we just remember some of the ancillary things for just a small moment. You know, it all started for him in 1977 at Hawaii as an assistant coach when he helped provide cars and improper benefits to players, allegedly. As a while ago that happened. That's 35 years ago. 35? 45? I don't know. Whatever it is. 45. 45 years ago. There was, you know, 2009 with the Karen Cipher extortion / sex case in Louisville. Mm-hmm. There's 2015 parties with strippers and hookers for recruits that he knew nothing about. That was a grad assistant. Louisville had to vacate their national championship. 2017, Adidas paid $100,000 to a Louisville recruit, and Rick was shocked. Shocked, I say. Knew nothing about it. Knew nothing about Andre McGee and what he was up to with those recruit parties and strippers and escorts and such. Knew nothing about any of it. Nothing about any of it. And he actually still has not received punishment from the NCAA yet when he was served on May 9th, I think it was, of this past year, of some more wrongdoing at Louisville about not properly overseeing his school. Allow me to share a couple of things with you. As someone that spent 9 years calling college basketball games inside of a program, I speak confidently on a couple of things. Number one, a head coach knows everything that is going on with his assistants, with his graduate assistants, with his director of operations, because those guys are never, ever acting without direction. That's number one. Number two, to plead complete ignorance and to paint yourself as someone that has just been completely framed throughout your entire life when this continues to follow you everywhere is sickening. Sickening. And frankly, number three, when I hear the response the last couple of days about Rick Pitino and my particular hatred's a strong word, but skepticism and kind of, I guess you'd call it, annoyance about celebrating him. I hear comments like this, and it sends me right to the other side. This is yesterday after they won, and is asked about Louisville. Look at the record. The NCAA suspended me for 5 games. If they thought in the slightest that I did any of the things I was accused of, I would have been suspended for 5 years, so they investigated fully. Louisville is a great program. Unfortunately, some people in life did some things wrong, and a lot of innocent people have suffered. Not only me, but a lot of people that are behind the program, and that's disappointing. But I'm the leader of this ship. I said it over and over. I deserve to be fired because if somebody under me did the wrong things, then I deserve it. Well, he said that yesterday. Okay? Remember this. He actually sued Louisville when he got fired. And in the result of that, a big part of the change was that the wording was changed from fired to Rick resigned. And he has said over and over that this job, the Iona job, this is his last job. Well, I say this with full confidence too. Every place he has been looking at where the next job is. I was in Louisville for a game one time when it was abundantly clear he was trying very hard to get the next job. And I'm not saying this doesn't happen all over college basketball and all over basketball period where guys are trying to get jobs that already belong to other people, but it was happening with Rick. Rick is everything that I would not want my college coach to be. And I would never send my son within 500 yards of Rick Pitino. And you could talk about how good of a coach he is. Yeah, you can have that. That's fine. I'm glad for Iona that they're going to the tournament. I'm glad for them. I'm glad for Tim Clueis, which so many people said, oh, how classy of Rick to mention Tim Clueis. There is not a thing that is classy about Rick Pitino. Not a thing. He is everything that has been wrong with college athletics for his entire career. Entire career. So I'm not going to get all excited at a redemption story. I'm not going to get all excited about him being back in the tournament because it's so nice. No. I hate seeing, and I know it happens in life, trust me. I cannot stand seeing people that I know don't do things the right way, that continuously do things the wrong way, and continuously live in denial about ever having done a wrong thing, and immediately put everybody else in front of him in that firing line. I cannot stand seeing those people have success. Because they will bail on you as quick as possible. Whenever things get tough, don't count on him. He's out. And he wants nothing to do with it. Narcissist is a word. There are a few others. But I know people like him. And I would never want my school to hire Rick Pitino. And there was a point that was rumored several years ago. several years ago. There was a point where it was rumored that Julie Herman, who was the AD at Rutgers at the time for a couple of years, wanted to move on from Eddie Jordan and hire Rick Pitino. Let's just say I would have been beyond disappointed in that decision. And so today, I don't feel good for Rick Pitino. I feel good for Iona and the players. I feel good for Tim Clueis. I don't enjoy seeing, frankly, bad people thrive. Lenny and Wyckoff. Go ahead, Lenny.
How you doing, buddy? I don't think it's a redemption story, okay? Mm-hmm. I understand he's done wrong in the past. All 64 other that are going to get in there, Colin, they all got something in the closet. You know that. It's a dirty business. NCAA.
Yeah, but we have a lot of evidence. I'm not saying that you're wrong about that. With this guy, we have a lot of evidence. And he has never taken responsibility for one bit of it. One bit of it. It's all circumstance and how he's gotten screwed over the years.
Yes, you're right. But you know what it boils down to. These programs want to win. Money, money, money. They put a guy in there that won. They go into the big dance. You know what it boils down to. It's all money.
Oh, I don't deny that at all. I don't deny that at all. And listen, to me, it's disappointing that a school like Iona hired him in the first place. After everything that's gone on, that they would bring him in to do it. Because, Lenny, I guarantee you this. He's talked so much about how this is the last job and all that, right? I guarantee you. Power 5 school comes knocking. See ya. He will run.
You would think Iona would be the end of the line, being it's a smaller program. You could be right. I mean, the money... Look what these guys are making, $8, $9, $10 million to coach.
Yeah, but he said over and over again that it's the last job. So let's see if Rick's honest in this case or if he just gets the old itch to say, you know, I never could have foreseen this happening. Please.
Yeah, but I know you're right here, but let's not take away from the kids, too.
I'm not taking away from the kids, Lenny. I feel good for the kids. Lenny, I also saw first and foremost up close and personal, and thanks for the call, how hard student athletes work and what is expected of them. And I don't think the general public knows what that looks like. I really don't. I think until you see what student athletes' daily lives are like, you wouldn't have a full appreciation for it because they are going from dawn until midnight on everything. This one, I'm not celebrating this guy. No chance. Absolutely not.